The Church's Music from the 20th Century. The 17th Century. The 11th Century. The 8th Century. The 4th Century. The best of the Church's music from the past 2,000 years. LutheranPublicRadio.org.
We have found a new particle never seen before in Mother Nature. By slamming two beams of proton at trillions of electron volts. And this particle, we think, was in fact, a particle like this, was the fuse that set off the explosion which created the universe. So that everything we see around us, the galaxies, the planets, the Earth, life itself, is a byproduct of an explosion which was set off by a Higgs-like particle.
That's theoretical physicist Michio Kaku speaking on CNN about the discovery of the so-called God particle, known by its more technical name, the Higgs boson. Now, this is far above my ability to understand. This is the stuff of pure theory, but now no longer. They say that they've discovered at least the evidence of what they call the God particle, the particle that assigns all the other particles of the universe their mass. Now, it might be problematic that it goes by the popular name, the God particle. We'll try and clear some of that up as we talk with Dr. Jeff Zwerink. He's a research scholar for Reasons to Believe based in Pasadena, California. He has a PhD in astrophysics from Iowa State University, and he's author of the book Who's Afraid of the Multiverse? Dr. Zwerink, welcome to Issues, Etc.
Thanks. I enjoy being here, Todd.
So has the so-called God particle, the Higgs boson, been discovered? Have they done it?
Well, there has definitely been the discovery of a particle that the best we can measure it looks like it. There's still a lot of work left to be done to verify what it looks like, but the LH or the detectors at the Large Hadron Collider over in Europe have found a particle that is a boson that has a mass around 125 gigaelectron volts, which is right about where we would expect the Higgs boson to be.
So how does this explain to us, kind of in layman's terms, the standard model of particle physics and how important the Higgs boson is for understanding? I mean, this is really the biggest discovery, if it is, in particle physics in about 60 years. It's long-awaited, isn't it?
Yeah, it's a big discovery, and I would actually say it's one of the bigger discoveries maybe in about 30 years, because kind of dating back to my time at Iowa State, one of the things that had been discovered just earlier that decade was there were two other bosons that had been discovered, the W and Z bosons. And I actually worked in the particle physics group at Iowa State there for a year. That had been part of the collaboration that had discovered these bosons. And what was significant about those particles was that they allowed us to say, to explain how the electromagnetic force, which operates between charged particles, and how the weak nuclear force, which is a subatomic force that operates inside the nucleus, how they're really the same force. And so it's got these two particles. The problem is, the masses of these particles were far larger than what they ought to be in the model. And so it's this Peter Higgs came up with a mechanism for explaining that, but that meant that there was this other particle, the Higgs boson, that's out there. And so the discovery of this Higgs boson is actually what allows the physicists to say, all right, we really do understand how these two forces operate at a very fundamental level because this particle is there.
Now, it's also been reported in the news that the Higgs is the particle that, in essence, gives all other particles, whatever they may be, quark, leptons, whatever they may be, mass.
Correct.
It's responsible for mass in the universe. Explain that in
right.
Layman's terms.
Well, it kind of the analogy that typically people give is, you know, if you imagine trying to move through an oil or a gooey type substance, that the bigger you are, the more you're going to drag that goo along, and it's going to feel heavier. So I can stick a toothpick down into the tar and pull it out pretty easily, but if I stick a, you know, 6-inch wide post down in there, it's going to be a lot harder to pull out. And so, you know, in that analogy, the toothpick is going to have very little mass, whereas this much larger thing is going to have a lot more mass to it. So the Higgs field is kind of like that, that different particles are going to be drag more of the Higgs field along with it, and so they're going to be more massive in that sense. And so it explains basically why all of these fundamental particles, the quarks, the electron, the muon, the tauon, why all of these particles in these models, they should have no mass, but they have mass. Well, it's because they interact with this Higgs field, and that's what gives them the mass they have.
So why was it dubbed early on the God particle? What was the thinking there?
Well, I think the reason why it was dubbed the God particle was due to a book written by Leon Lederman, who's a very prominent particle physicist. He was a Nobel laureate back in either the 80s or 90s, I can't remember which, who had written a book on the Higgs boson, and the name of the book is called The God Particle. And somewhat that was an editorial choice. I don't know that that was his choice of the name for the book, but that's kind of, you know, just because that was the book that was where he was talking about the Higgs boson, that's kind of how it got the moniker. And, you know, there's, you know, the implications of somehow this is, you know, a transcendent particle or something outside our universe. That's not the way physicists look at it at all. But, you know, there is this connotation that it's what's giving mass. So it's creating mass, if you will, given the hyperbole of that statement. But so that's kind of why the God particle has stuck around, at least in the more popular culture. I know most physicists don't like the name.
Can you explain to us how you discover something like this and others that cannot be seen, that exist in, I guess, in the colliders for incredibly short periods of time? How is it done?
Now, that's a really good question. You know, and I think really when you get down and even ask the question of, you know, how do we know electrons exist, is what you do is you say, all right, I can, given what I know, I can build a detector or build an experiment and do this, and then I measure certain things afterwards. And so there, you know, as it pertains to the detectors at the LHC, there are these multi-story detectors, which, you know, contain millions, at least millions of dollars worth of equipment, if not maybe billions, of electronics that are sensitive to particles that have charge that go through them. There are certain kinds of detectors that, as charge goes through them, it gives off light, and other places it causes some other electrical signal. And so you just put all this these detectors together to say, all right, what can I measure? And so I measure electrical signals out of this detector, and I measure, you know, some maybe vibrations or whatever it is. You're measuring these signals that you can record on your instruments, and then you try and explain, okay, what is the best way to explain this? Well, I know that if I pass charge through a scintillator, it gives off a certain amount of light, and by measuring the amount of light, it can tell me how much charge the particle had. And so it's really just this kind of, you go back to the very early particle accelerators, and they were much simpler. And so even though you can't see, you could say, all right, something like this had to happen, and the most likely explanation is that this particle had this mass, and that matches the electron, and so we call it the electron. You know, unfortunately, it just can't get much simpler, or I can't explain it much more simply, but it's really just this building on the knowledge we have to say, okay, if this happens, I see these sorts of signals in my detector, and when I put enough, or then I make a bigger collision, and I say, okay, I can explain all this because I've seen this before, and these new things are best explained if there's this kind of particle. And so by what they do for the Higgs boson is if they produce the Higgs boson, we can do calculations that say it ought to decay this way, and then they go look in their particle detectors to say, do I find any collisions where it looks like I get these kinds of particles out?
Is it true that this incredibly gigantic particle accelerator that was used in part to discover this was pretty much built. I mean, we're talking about an enormous machine built pretty much to find the Higgs boson.
The latest upgrades to it were, that was its primary goal. Now, in fairness, though, I would say that this particle accelerator has been around for, you know, decades. It's been in there's a tunnel underground in Europe on the France-Swiss border that's a 17-mile tunnel. They've had previous particle accelerators, and so a lot of the infrastructure was already there, but they went through and said, all right, what kinds of upgrades, how strong a magnets do we need, how powerful of an accelerator do we need, what kinds of detectors do we need, in order to say the Higgs boson is either there or that it doesn't exist. So yeah, that was its reason for the latest upgrade, which began operation about 4 years ago.
What does this all say now that kind of one of the major pieces of the puzzle for particle physics has apparently fallen into place? What does it say to you about the fine-tuning of our universe of creation?
Well, I would say this. It is kind of the last major piece of the particle physics puzzle, at least of the standard model. So, you know, this is a significant because it kind of, if indeed this is the Higgs boson and it has the properties that we expect, then that would be kind of the last piece of the puzzle that explains why the electromagnetic and strong and weak nuclear actions interact the way they do. My expectation, and hope at least, is that it doesn't exactly match the standard particle physics Higgs boson, because what that would do is it would give us a clue to that more complete model, which accounts for dark matter and incorporates gravity. You know, the standard model of particle physics is good for what it does, but we know it's not the final or complete model, and so hopefully it'll give us hints of what that complete model is, and where we've gotten more in understanding, we find more evidence of fine-tuning. You know, for example, when we talked about the Higgs boson is what's responsible for imparting, or the masses that the particles have. Well, when we look out at the universe, we find that if the particles that we know, the proton and the electron, had different masses, then the characteristics of matter would be very different, and different in such a way that life, at least life as we could even conceive it, would be possible. And so I expect that as we understand the Higgs boson in even greater detail, or this particle that looks like the Higgs boson, that hopefully it will give us clues to that more complete theory, and I expect that it will also reveal areas of fine-tuning that we weren't even aware of. So maybe it has to have such and such mass, or such and such of an energy for the boson, such that all the masses come out properly, or something like that. But I just don't know. We're going to have to do a lot more study before the specifics of how that would play out become apparent.
When we come back, a few more minutes with Dr. Jeff Zwerink, we're talking about the discovery of the God particle on this Friday afternoon, July the 6th, and then Issues Etc. Soundbite of the Week. We'll have 4 sound bites to play for you. All you got to do is listen and then vote, 1-877-623-6943. 1-877-623-6943. Talk back at issuesetc.org or send us a tweet at issuesetc. You can always vote in advance at our Facebook fan page, facebook.com/issuesetc. A few more minutes on the discovery of the God particle, then we'll play Issues Etc. Soundbite of the Week.
Hi, this is Jonathan Collin from France.
Thanks to God's gift of the Internet, people are listening to Issues Etc. around the world.
First, I would like to say thank you very much for your program. It very much ministers to those of us who are outside the comforts and the luxuries of having a confessional Lutheran congregation nearby. Thank you very much for this great resource.
Listen to what you want, when you want, wherever you are. IssuesETC.org.
Pastor Todd, I downloaded your Issues Etc. app for my Android phone, and I listen to it while I'm on the treadmill.
You can listen to Issues Etc. live or on demand with the new Issues Etc. Android or iPhone app. You can download these apps at our website, issuesetc.org. Issues Etc. in the palm of your hand. Download an app today.
My new Adam really enjoys the app while I'm on the treadmill.
Talk radio for the thinking Christian. You're listening to Issues Etc.
Thanks to the following congregations for standing with us by joining the Issues Etc. 300: Trinity Lutheran, Brooklyn, New York; Hope Lutheran, Birmingham, Alabama; Our Savior Lutheran, Paradise, California; St. John Lutheran, Ray, Michigan; Peace with Christ Lutheran, Fort Collins, Colorado; Shepherd of the Hills Lutheran, Kimberling City, Missouri; the Lutheran Church of Our Savior, Salinas, California; St. John's Lutheran, Algoma, Wisconsin; and St. John's Lutheran, Colton, California. Find out how your church can support this worldwide outreach by including Issues Etc. in your mission or advertising budget. Just go to our website, issuesetc.org, click support, and print a one-page flyer. When your congregation joins the Issues Etc. 300, we'll publicize your congregation on the radio, at our website, and in the Issues Etc. journal. issuesetc.org and click support. The Issues Etc. 300.
A reputable newspaper would not have a defense correspondent who couldn't tell the difference between a battleship and a tank. Yet we have people writing about religion who have no idea the difference between different Christian groups, different Christian beliefs.
The conscience of the Christian and the heart of the Christian by faith finds in the gospel, and only in the gospel, a good and a clean conscience.
There isn't any high ground to atheism. Atheism is simply irrational.
The Lord's Supper is not incidental or an add-on to the life of the church. Where Jesus is, there is the church. And here, that presence is defined by the bread of the Eucharist.
In about 5 minutes, we'll play Issues Etc., Soundbite of the Week. We're talking about the discovery of the God particle. Dr. Jeff Zwerink is our guest. I'm wondering, Dr. Zwerink, does this discovery vindicate the direction of particle physics up to this point for about the last 100 years? How good this branch of science is doing?
Absolutely. I mean, like I said, this question of the Higgs boson dates back probably 60 years, but again, going back 30 years ago, the discovery of these W and Z bosons, it says, hey, this allows us to explain these two very disparate ideas, the electromagnetic force and the weak nuclear force, with the same theoretical mechanism. And so the discovery of the Higgs boson really validates that, yeah, that's a good way to look at things, that there really is a unity and a simplicity to how the world operates that is just not apparent in the low energy state that it's in right now. And so as we can push up and create those higher energies, we can see that unity and simplicity with which God created the universe.
Some people have said or worried that with the discovery of the so-called God particle, that it somehow upturns Christian faith. Has this discovery made any impact on Christian faith? About a minute and a half before we wrap up.
I would say it just enhances the idea that we live in a universe that is well-designed. We live in a universe that's understandable by humanity. Some are going to argue that, well, this is one less area where God can be involved, but I think that just identifies the problem of arguing from God where we don't understand. Where we do understand, I would say that this just continues to affirm that we live in a universe designed for us to be here.
With about 30 seconds, how big is this discovery in a nutshell for people who don't grasp the science here but are reading the headlines? How big is this discovery?
This is a guaranteed Nobel Prize winning discovery. It's that big. It just really adds to our understanding of the universe and hopefully will give us a good picture of where to go for the next 50 years in our studies.
Dr. Jeff Zwerink is research scholar for Reasons to Believe based in Pasadena, California. He has a PhD in astrophysics from Iowa State University, and he's author of the book Who's Afraid of the Multiverse? You'll find a link to Reasons to Believe at our website, issuesetc.org. Click Listen on Demand. Dr. Zwerink, thanks for your time.
Thank you, Todd.